Golden State Media Concepts bring you Book Review Podcast, a haven for bookworms of all ages and the widest genres, from mystery to memoirs, romance to comedy, fantasy to sci-fi. If you love to read, this is the podcast for you. It's the Golden State Media Concepts Book Review Podcast.
Welcome to the GSMC Book Review Podcast, brought to you by the GSMC Podcast Network. I am your host, Sarah, and it is wonderful to be with you to talk about books. In this case, we'll be talking about some audiobooks, because I, as I've mentioned before, have been listening to audiobooks, kind of catching up on my to-be-read list through audiobooks. When I'm driving, when I'm running errands, all those good things, I tend to listen to an audiobook. And, you know, as an introvert, it also helps me to avoid talking to people sometimes, which is maybe not the nicest way of going through the world, but it's just what I do. I go to the grocery store, I listen to an audiobook. I drive to work, I listen to an audiobook. So, yeah, I've been listening to audiobooks for the 17th time. I've just said that word in the first 2 minutes of the show. At any rate, I am going to talk about three books that I have recently finished. They have a few things in common. One, they're all audiobooks that I listen to. Obviously, they're regular books as well. I just happen to have listened to them. Two, they all fall into the science fiction slash fantasy genre. And three, they all just happen to be the second book in a series. That wasn't planned. That just happened to be coincidence that three books I listened to in a row happened to be the second book in a series. So the first book that I'm going to talk about today is called The Fates Divide by Veronica Roth. You may have listened to the episode a while back where I talked about the first book in this series, Carve the Mark. This is the second book in a duology. So it's actually the last book of the series. Can you call it a series if it's two? I am not sure, but it's duology and it's the second of that duology. So it completes this story. That's actually pretty amazing because fantasy and science fiction stories, books, tend to come in at least trilogies, if not more books in a series. So there only being two was a little bit surprising to me. Veronica Roth, you may know or you may remember if you listened to the first episode, is also the author of the Divergent series. That is a dystopian, a little bit of fantasy, a little science fiction also. This one is more on the science fiction-y side because it does take place in space, but there is also kind of a fantasy element to it in that, you know, fantasy and sci-fi can really blur the lines sometimes. There's something called current gifts. So the current is everywhere. It runs through everyone and it gives every person a different ability of some kind. So The Fates Divide picks up pretty much where the first one, Carve the Mark, left off. And that was, it wasn't exactly a cliffhanger, but it definitely ended on some, whew, there's a lot of stuff going on in that book. So I'll give you the description of the book, and that is as follows. The lives of Syra Noavec and Akos Karaseth are ruled by their fates, spoken by the oracles at their births. The fates, once determined, are inescapable. Akos is in love with Syra, in spite of his fate. He will die in service to Syra's family. And when Syra's father, Lazmet Noavec, a soulless tyrant thought to be dead, reclaims the Shotet throne, Akos believes his end is closer than ever. As Lazmet ignites a barbaric war, Syra and Akos are desperate to stop him at any cost. For Syra, that could mean taking the life of the man who may or may not be her father. For Akos, it could mean giving his own. In a stunning twist, the two will discover how fate defines their lives in ways most unexpected. So that gives you a bit of a picture. Like I said, this takes place somewhere in the universe out there. There are 9 planets, basically, and then there's a bunch of, what do they call it, the rim, the something, it's not the rim, I think that's more Star Wars. At any rate, now I can't remember what it was, but kind of they're not represented border planets, maybe they're not even planets, maybe they're more like asteroids. At any rate, so you've got all the political things going on. You've got oracles who speak fates at the birth of certain people. Not everyone gets a fate. There are fated families, so chances are good if you are born into a fated family, you will have a fate, but it doesn't mean that you will necessarily have a fate, but you're more likely to. So everyone has current gifts, but not everyone has a fate. In the first book, then, Syra and Akkos are brought together. It turns out that their current gifts kind of work together, and so they're thrown together. Akkos is actually kidnapped and brought. They live on the same planet, but Akkos is part of the Shotet is Syra's people, and they are seen as kind of interlopers. They're not seen as an actual country, although they are fighting to claim that place as an actual country with representation and rights, etc. Akkos is kidnapped and brought over. He's then, you know, he's in service to Syra's family. He's actually in service to Syra. They fall in love in the first book. That tells you a lot about the first book, and yet also nothing at all about the first book. So in the second book, it picks right back up. It is, I really, really liked the first book, and I really liked this book as well, but I did like the first book better. This one felt, it's called The Fates Divide, and in some ways, everything kind of divides. Syra and Akkos actually end up sort of going their own ways for part of the book, so they aren't working together. They're off in different directions, and while it made sense, it was also kind of frustrating for me as a reader because they, you know, as often happens in young adult books, they weren't communicating, and they each thought that they were doing the right thing, etc. So there's kind of that division. You know, the first book works so hard to cement their relationship, to bring them together first as friends, then as in more romantic relationship. And then in this one, they are divided. That's not what the title means, The Fates Divide, but I think it probably goes into that title. And also there is, in the first audiobook, which I also listened to, and I think this may have affected me a little bit. So the book is told from both Syra and Akkos' perspectives. The book is written, Syra's is in first person, Akkos' chapters are in third person. So in the audiobooks, there's a female narrator and a male narrator, which works great. In this book, she chose to add two more POVs, points of view, and that is Akkos' brother and Akkos' sister. So they each get their chapters. His sister gets more chapters, and it actually makes a lot of sense because she is important in ways in this whole whole political realm of this book. And again, not going to go into it too much. And then Akkos' brother is also important, but for a different way. And he only gets like 3 chapters. Maybe it's a few more than that, but he really doesn't get much. So that kind of threw me off because he only got a chapter here and there. So it felt very sporadic when we got his point of view. And while I understood it, and while it did help to further the plot, it was a little strange that we only got those snatches, those glimpses of his point of view, because he plays a fairly interesting kind of big role in the book. And especially from the way the first book ended, there's a certain role that he plays in this story going forward. So I still really enjoyed the story. I thought she wrapped it up well. I thought she tied up pretty much all the loose ends. I did enjoy the different POVs. I think I maybe enjoyed it a little more when it was just Syra and Akkos in that first book, but I do understand mostly why she went with with adding the two other POVs, because it did help to explain some of the things that would not have been explained if she hadn't included those, because Syra and Akkos have kind of gone in different directions, and some of the other characters have gone in different directions. There's a lot going on politically. There's the possibility of war, as it said, you know, with Syra's father returning, and he's trying to reclaim a throne that isn't recognized, etc. So lots of politics, lots of behind the scenes, lots of trying to overthrow evil tyrants, etc. So there's a lot of action. There is a little bit of romance with Syra and Akkos. There's some great other representations. There's a same-sex couple, which I appreciated, and it's just presented as, oh, look, these two people love each other. How crazy is that? You know, just it doesn't feel gratuitous. It just is, like in life. So I really appreciated that perspective. I have to tell you, there was one place in there, and I can't even remember which female character it was referring to, but she was trying to do something and it wasn't going very well, but nevertheless, she persisted. Yes, Veronica Roth actually wrote that line into the book. Nevertheless, she persisted. And I said yes when I read that line. So good job, Veronica Roth. I loved that part. At any rate, The Fates Divide, as a series, a duology, I would definitely recommend it, especially if you liked Divergent. It's very, very different from Divergent. But if you like that writing style, if you liked Veronica Roth's writing style, if you liked the characters in that four, and now I'm blanking on the main character in Divergent, but if you liked their story, then you would definitely want to check out this duology. It's Carve the Mark and The Fates Divide. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be talking about a Terry Brooks book that I just finished reading. So stay tuned. You're listening to the GSMC podcast, book review podcast, and I will be right back.
Want to know the latest and hottest music hitting the airwaves? Don't be left out. Listen to the Golden State Media Concepts Music Podcast. Keith keeps you on the loop with everything you need to know from pop, rock, hip-hop, and the top 40. And we'll throw in news of your favorite artists, concert and tour dates, and so much more. Listen no further, because this is the Gold Standard in Music Podcast.
Welcome back to the GSMC Book Review Podcast. I am talking today about books that I have been listening to that I have finished recently. And it just so happens that each of the three that I am talking about today are the second in a series of books. So this next one is The Scar Invasion by Terry Brooks. It is the second in his Fall of Shannara series. I've talked about Terry Brooks on the podcast before. Been reading him since high school. Been loving him since high school. And the Shannara series really is this epic series that takes place over thousands of years from the first one, The Sword of Shannara, that came out in the 70s sometime, I believe. And now we have this that's called The Fall of Shannara. So I'm intrigued to see exactly how that's going to play out. So unlike the duology, this is the second in a four-part series. So we still have two more books to go. And this is another example of the land in the Shannara series. It's the Four Lands. There are other, that's what the continent is called, and that is the continent of North America-ish. So this is way, 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 way in the future, because it's been thousands of years since the series started, and that was in the future, after wars and major disaster changed the face of the planet, there were all sorts of reactions that caused mutations, and that's how you get some of the different races. Elves actually have been in the world from the beginning of time, pretty much, but that's how we got the dwarves and the trolls, etc. So that explains how there are those different fantasy races. So now here we are Thousands of years later, the Four Lands are once again threatened, this time by a group of people called the Skaar, who come from somewhere off the continent. And the first sets of books, because there's like sets of trilogies, and I don't know off the top of my head, I don't remember how many, that further the story and take place, you know, maybe 100 years later after the, you know, they jump ahead 100 years, 1,000 years, whatever it is, in a trilogy a while back, they actually had an excursion, an adventure off the continent. They went somewhere else. So we do know that there are other people out there in the world that you can get to. But now we have people coming on into the Four Lands because their home is being threatened and they're looking for a new place to live. And so they've been plotting to come in and take over the Four Lands so that they can live there, since their homeland is being threatened. Yes, there's all sorts of other things going on. The first thing that they choose to do is take over the Druid Order, and the Druids are always being threatened. I mean, there have been Druids in this series from the beginning, and this is the fourth Druid Order, so there have been three other iterations before this, but for a lot of the books, there's only one Druid in existence. Sometimes there's more, and there's what it's supposed to be, which is a council of Druids and a group of Druids learning magic. There's a lot of magic versus science in these books. So the Southland, that's where the humans live. The Southland is very, very, very against magic, although there's always forms of magic in the Southland, even though they profess to be against it. They are more into science. The rest of the Four Lands are a lot more leery of science because they see science as having destroyed the old world before the Great Wars. So there's this definite tension between science and magic. So the Fourth Druid Order at the end of the first book is actually invaded and attacked. And you know what? I just realized that I did not read you the description of this book. I've just been yammering on. Let me give you that so maybe it will explain it better than I am explaining. It says, the Four Lands are under siege. Wielding a magical ability virtually impossible to combat, mysterious invaders defeat the most fearsome troll armies, then focus their savagery on the Druid Order, and all hope seems lost. Eventually, the invaders reveal a more human face, but understanding their motives in no way mitigates the brutality of their actions. Dar-Lee, once the High Druid's blade, has crossed paths and swords with their fearless leader, with their ruthless leader before. So he knows that if any hope exists, it rests in the hands of the Druid Drisker Ark, now trapped inside vanished Paranor. As Drisker races to find the ancient knowledge that could free him, Dar goes in search of Tarsha Kanan, the young woman blessed with the powerful gift of the Wish Song, whose magic could draw Drisker back into the world of the living. But little do they know that what appeared to be a formidable invading force may only be the forerunner of a much larger army, one intent on nothing less than total conquest. That gives you a little bit more of a description of the Skaar invasion. The Skaar are the formidable people invading with the magic that makes them very difficult to defeat. One thing that I've said before when I talk about Terry Brooks that I love about this series is that there are certain elements that are almost always present in the books. The Druids are always present in some variation. There's almost always a Lee character that, going back to the beginning, it used to be the Ohmsford family had the gift of the Wish Song, and that started with Shay Ohmsford in the first book and then moved through. Eventually, they intermarried with the Lees, and so then you had some of the Lees with the Wish Song, and then it, you know, as families, of course, it's been thousands of years, as family trees sprout many, many, many different branches. So now we have Tarsha Kanan, who has the Wish Song, but she has the wrong last name. It's very strange for me not to have an Ohmsford, even though there haven't been Ohmsfords for the last couple of series. I have been feeling a little not quite dissatisfied, maybe slightly dissatisfied with the Shannara books the last little while. I still love them. I still like the, you know, the fact that there's so many elements that are familiar and that keep building on each other. And so as you read through this, then the world just gets more detailed and more rich and colorful. And you get these characters that you grow to love, and then they might not be in the next one, but some of their relations are in the next one. And there's, especially in this one, because it is called The Fall of Shannara, there's a lot of reference to the other stories, which I am enjoying, all of that kind of tying together of those various strings. What I realized in reading this one is the source of my dissatisfaction. At the beginning, especially in the first trilogy, and then moving forward from there, there was always, you know, the big threat that was threatening the four lands, usually magical. And then it was your typical hero's journey, where someone kind of unexpected is called upon to go and fight the big bad, as they would say in Buffy, fight this usually magical force that was threatening the four lands. They had to figure out what seemed like an impossible task and make it work. And you brought in all these different characters who had a role to play in that. And there's still that to a certain extent, but it's gotten a lot more what feels like political to me as the series has gone on and you keep going through these different stories. So there's still a threat, like here, there's still this threat of the Scar invasion, and the Scars do have magic, but it's not kind of like that, you know, good versus evil. And excuse that noise, I'm sorry, I just bumped the mic. You know, the sort of good versus the big bad evil that's easy to point to and say evil. There's a lot more shades of gray, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but it's also, there's always the Federation in the Southland is always plotting something, and there's always someone within that that's plotting against the other things that are plotting, and it feels it's gotten, I don't know if even political is the right word, but it feels less about the going and fighting the big evil and more about all of these, yeah, political machinations, fighting for power, etc., etc. And I guess the world feels like there's enough of that lately, and I kind of want my fantasy to take me into fantasy. It's still a good book, and it's going to definitely appeal to other people because of this sort of shift that it has taken. So I'm not dismissing that. I understand that for some people that's going to make the story even better. For me, it is definitely the source of my dissatisfaction. So while I love this series overall, I would say that right now I'm in deep like with the current series, with this Fall of Shannara portion of the overall Shannara series, with this set of four books. So take that as you will, whether that makes you want to read it or not, I don't know, but you know, you always have to make your own decisions. I'm just here giving you my perspective. It is an audiobook, so I should talk. It has thankfully the same narrator as the first book. I hate it when they switch narrators halfway through. I understand that life happens. He's very good, and he does the voices so that you can tell who he is speaking about, and you know, all the things that I appreciate about a good audiobook narrator. He's British, which is always fun. Then I get British voices stuck in my head. At any rate, enjoyed the audiobook. I am definitely intrigued to see where this story is going, and I will put up with my own sense of dissatisfaction over the political machinations to keep with the elves and the trolls and the magic and the overarching hero's journey storyline. So that is my quick take on The Scar Invasion by Terry Brooks. When we come back, we will be shifting gears just a little bit again and moving on to Little Bigfoot Big City by Jennifer Weiner. So stay tuned. You're listening to the GSMC Book Review Podcast, and I will be right back.
Tired of searching the vast jungle of podcasts? Now listen close and hear this out. There's a podcast network that covers just about everything that you've been searching.
Hey!
The Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network is here. Nothing less than a podcast bliss with endless hours of podcast coverage. From news, sports, music, fashion, cooking, entertainment, fantasy, football, and so much more. So stop lurking around and go straight out to the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. Guaranteed to fill that podcast itch. whatever it may be, visit us at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and download us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Google Play.
Welcome back to the GSMC Book Review Podcast, talking today about audiobooks that I have finished recently. All of them are the second books in a series. As I mentioned before the break, I am moving on now to talking about Little Bigfoot, Big City by Jennifer Weiner. I always have to think about the title just to make sure I get the correct number of bigs in there. So I reviewed the first one, which was called The Littlest Bigfoot, a while ago, over a year ago. This one, the second one, I think actually came out in October, so I am really behind on catching up with it, even though I really liked the first one and I was looking forward to the second one, just hadn't quite gotten around to it. So I was very happy to be able to read or to listen to this one. It's another one with different points of view. So there are three narrators, I think, in this one. Yes. So Millie, there's a boy named Jeremy, and then there is Alice. So each of those three get their own voice, and they each have chapters, of course, in those voices, so then three narrators. So let me give you the description. 12-year-old Alice Mayfair has a secret. She's not human. But who or what is she? While Alice goes in search of her past, her best friend, Millie Maximus, a tiny Bigfoot with a big voice, prepares for her future. Together, they plan to sneak off to New York City, where Millie hopes to audition for the next stage, the TV show she's sure will rocket her to stardom and free her from the suffocating expectations of her tribe. Meanwhile, Jeremy Bigelow's Bigfoot research has put him on the radar of a shadowy government organization led by a mysterious man named Trip Carruthers. The Bigfoots have something, a chemical so powerful and dangerous that the government will do anything to obtain it, and Jeremy is tasked with securing it once and for all. In an unexpected twist of fate, Jeremy, Alice, and Millie find themselves facing off at a crossroads. But in order to determine where they're going, they have to first figure out where they came from and draw the line between what is good, what is evil, and what it means to be a hero. So this is a young adult book. This is Jennifer Weiner's first foray into young adult books. It is, the characters are all around that 12-year-old age, I believe, and that's about the age I would say it's good for. Amazon tells me from the School Library Journal, grades 4 through 6. So that's a little younger, up to that 12. I liked the first book because Alice has always felt out of place. She feels out of place in her own family. She feels out of place at the boarding school that her parent, boarding schools, she's been in like 7 of them, that her parents send her to. She's always struggled with fitting in. Millie is one of the Bigfoots. It's Bigfoots, not Bigfeet. They don't call themselves that, though. They call themselves the Yair. Millie is a Yair, but she's a teeny tiny little Yair. She's tiny compared to all of the rest of those around her. She has different colored fur, and she really, really, really wants to be a no-fur or go out into the no-fur world and find out what it's all about. So you have both of these young girls who don't feel like they quite fit in the world they've been put in, really would love, I mean, Alice, when she discovers the Yair, would love to just go live with them and be a Yair. Millie wants to go and sing on this show called The Next Stage. She wants to go into the no-fur world and find out what that's like. And so, you know, there's definitely that dynamic. Jeremy also feels like he doesn't fit in. He doesn't feel like he fits in with his family, where his brothers are prodigies of some sort in various ways. And he kind of feels ignored by his parents because of that. He's the youngest, so he doesn't fit in, but he gets drawn into this search for Bigfoots, finds a friend who's also interested in it. So what I love about this is that there's your characters that feel like misfits. You know, they feel like they don't quite fit in. And as someone who has definitely gone through that in my own life, I always appreciate seeing that and seeing people find their own tribes. No pun intended, since yours are tribes. But seeing how characters are able to find their own family, figure out the dynamics of their biological family, maybe, and just figure out. This second book, I believe it will be a trilogy. I don't know when the next one will come out. When I was looking on Jennifer Weiner's website, I didn't see anything about a possible release date. I might have missed it. But this is definitely kind of one of those, if it's a trilogy, then it makes perfect sense. This is definitely a turning point book. So a lot of things shift in this book and get you ready. You know, in the first book, everything's kind of being set up and you're being introduced to the characters. In this book, you then know the characters and there's a bunch of shifts. Like it said in the description, Alice is not human. She finds that out at the very end of the last book. So she is thrilled. She's hoping that maybe that means that she is Yair and that that's why she doesn't fit in with her family. So she goes on a quest to figure that out. As that happens, and as Millie is going on this show, then they found each other in the first book and they became friends and really became kind of ports in their own storms, the storms of their lives through that friendship, because they did both feel misunderstood and lonely, and so they found each other. They drift apart a little bit in this book. Millie is really focusing on that audition, trying to figure out how to do that so she can get on. You have to send in a video, and so she's trying to figure out how to make it so that you can't actually see that she's a furry little Bigfoot. Alice is trying to figure out her family, but she also really feels like she's lost Millie in some ways as the book progresses. So they have to figure all of that out and navigate. You know, being a 12-year-old girl is hard enough. Being a 12-year-old girl, navigating friendships can be really hard. And not, you know, as adults, we're always not great at communicating our feelings and what's going on. As 12-year-old adolescents who have so many thoughts and hormones and craziness coursing through their bodies, makes it hard to figure some of those things out. So definitely coming of age stories happening here, and both girls are growing and maturing and learning to navigate the world in new ways. Jeremy is also growing, and then this book brings the three of them together in a couple of different ways. So instead of two different stories, because it was in the first book mostly Millie and Alice who have their own stories, but they're friends, and then Jeremy who's trying to find the Bigfoot tribes. They're kind of interacting a little bit more in this book and realizing that they have more in common than maybe they thought in the first place. I really am excited to find out what happens in this trilogy. I love the characters. I've always enjoyed Jennifer Weiner's writing. I've read a lot of her adult novels. Now I'm loving that she is creating this world for young adults, and for young adults to really hopefully see themselves in this world through the eyes of Alice or Millie or Jeremy. So if you have young people in your family, that you should definitely encourage them to read this if they're interested in kind of fantasy books or coming of age books or books about friendship. Yeah, I would definitely, and even, you know, it says 4 to 6, but I'm obviously not in either 4th, 5th, or 6th grade, and I still liked it. So you can just make your own determination on what age group you want to read this book. Do some research, read the book jacket, read the dust jacket, read some reviews, you know, do all of those things. Don't just take my word for it. Now I'm channeling Reading Rainbow. You don't have to take my word for it. Thank you, LeVar Burton. I'm going to wrap this up. So thank you so much for joining me for this episode of the GSMC Book Review Podcast. Hopefully you will join me again next week. I'm going to be talking about some mysteries and crime novels that I have been reading. So looking forward to that. Join me for that episode. In the meantime, have a wonderful week and go out there and get yourself lost in a good book. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Book Review Podcast. part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. From movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.